Mm-hmm. I'm glad Judas turned on me.
Yeah, I'm trying to help Mayo out here.
That's right, I'm quiet.
Item 2, from the Director of County Economic Development, Department of Administrative Services, requesting authorization to create a 2014 Workforce Development Investment using $400,000 of the 2014 Economic Development Fund. In December, the board referred this item back to the committee.
All right. And T. Whaley-Smith, if you want to please pick it up from where we left off. We did ask that you bring in the principals, so I think certainly we would like to have them involved this morning with the committee. If you would please make that presentation before we go to committee questions and so on. So please.
Chairwoman and Supervisor, thank you very much for the opportunity to continue to talk about workforce development in Milwaukee County. I think we all agree that jobs is a top priority. And certainly the actions of this board, together with the county executive in support of that mission, continue to be appreciated, and we obviously want to do this right. So as part of the land sales proceeds that are projected for 2014, the board set aside 25% of that for economic development purposes. It was an economic development fund, and it's similar to what the board had done in previous years. Pool of money was approximately $1.3 million, and the board already out of that fund approved, and the county executive has also approved spending about $800,000 towards the foreclosure issues and getting a 0% loan fund together with funding a master property inventory to continue to streamline the disposition of county-owned real estate to get it back on the tax rolls. So the remaining amount in that fund is exactly $400,000, and our intent here is really to continue the great work of the Ready to Work program that was set up and has had significant job placement. Just had another meeting with WRTP Big Step and the placement of 500 individuals into jobs that are at $18 an hour or higher. And so what we're really proposing here is a continuation of the Ready to Work program, but creating several efficiencies. The first efficiency is that we want to leverage our funds. We want to work with other funders to implement what are called sector-based intermediaries, and there's a wonderful opportunity to do that with something called the Workforce Funders Alliance, and I have them here as well. But the other sort of efficiency that is created is in reporting. Currently, if you look at an awardee like WRTP Big Step, they're responsible for reporting to multiple different funding agencies with multiple different criteria, and we really want to streamline that process so less money is spent on reporting and more money is spent on placing individuals, with actually increasing the accountability of the process by making it a more uniform standard. So members of the Workforce Funding Alliance were at the Finance Committee when this idea was first presented. It's gone through a couple of different iterations, and the last request was, with so much going on towards this really exciting topic, to have the Workforce Funding Alliance come back in for you to better understand what it is that they do, and then I can answer more questions. So with that, I would like to invite up Karen Gotzler and Gil Yannis. Gil Yannis, you'll recall, is retired from the Northwestern Mutual Foundation and is on the board of the as a volunteer for the Workforce Funding Alliance. And then Karen Gosler, many of you know from her work with Urban Strategies and the really top quality she works as a consultant for multiple different initiatives. And she is the Urban Strategies, and Karen are sort of the administrative function of the Workforce Funding Alliance that can describe more about how it operates. So I know they have a presentation here, so if they want to come up. Jerry coming too? We have a special guest here today, Mr. Jerry Baker, also from the Helen Bader Foundation, currently working on workforce strategies and is also a member of the Alliance. And there are copies of this that I'll circulate as well.
All right. Please, give us the name to go with the face, because we just got three names there. And then please present your piece with the Workforce Alliance.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to start as
Tagg has stated, my name is Gil Yannis. I'm former director of the foundation at Northwestern Mutual. Have been involved in philanthropy for the last 20 years of my career before my retirement, and former chairperson of the Alliance. And I'm just really here to tell you that in that time that the Alliance has, I've been on since the beginning, we have fought really in philanthropy areas and the funders, have fought for an effort that was like built in the model of the Alliance, that we could collaborate with public and private funding towards one goal. And it has worked out very, very well for us. Now, we have just had a recent change, and we have a new chair of our board. And I would like to now hand it over to Jerry. I'm sorry, Jerry. I misplaced your last name.
Roberts.
Oh, and I got it wrong, so that's all right.
Maybe that's why I did that. I'm sorry, Jerry. So sorry about that. But Jerry is our new chairperson. And while I remain on the board, I'm going to have Jerry take you through the Alliance and the history of how we have really moved along and progressed on it. So go ahead.
Thanks and good morning. My name is Jerry Roberts. I currently work for the Helen Bader Foundation. I manage their portfolio for workforce and economic development. I have a long history in the workforce development space and economic development space. I've been with the Alliance a couple of years now, and what the Alliance is and what it does for us as a foundation, as a funder, is it allows us to align the dollars that we have to have a greater impact with the work that we do. Our budget is such that we can fill in gaps where we see them with public dollars that are coming out there. We found that the Alliance is a great way to work with public and private entities to be able to leverage and have the greatest impact for our dollars. We budget about $1.5 million annually in workforce activities for the city of Milwaukee, and it's a small drop in the bucket. We've been able to leverage our investment with the Alliance, in essence doubling what we've been able to do because of the way we've been able to leverage and pool our dollars with the other members. We have over 25 members, 14 private, 7 public, and employers are a big part of that to enhance the workforce development system for both the workers and the employees. It's allowed us to look at a national model of funding collaborations. The National Fund for Workforce Solutions, we follow their model, and they organize and support funding collaborators across the country. We are one of 4 that are in the Midwest, Milwaukee. We have our Central Wisconsin partners in Wisconsin Rapids, Chicago, and Detroit. But it's a national model that allows us to pull from not only the work that they're doing, to pull from best practices, to find out what's working, where similar size cities, similar size models, and to be able to move from there. But we are also working with a model that shows that collaborative, that plan and support, workforce intermediaries that work with industry partnerships can work and do work and have a larger impact on the people that it's designed to serve, and that is the unemployed and underemployed people in communities just like this one. Our goal is to develop a better coordinated workforce development system through public and private collaboration that enhances our regional competitiveness. Like I mentioned, I've worked in workforce development for a long time after leaving the private sector, and I've seen the need for us to better coordinate. We have too many silos in funding that exist in our workforce funding streams. We have Department of Labor dollars, we have State Department of Workforce Development dollars, we have W-2 dollars, ESSET dollars, and then we have the private funders that are out there trying to do their part as well. How do we coordinate funding and systems, again, to fund agencies and programs that are doing the work on the ground, that provide directed career advancement support to low-income, low-skilled people, which are underemployed folks, and influence cross-sector partnerships and linkages that remove those silos that I mentioned so that we can, again, have better cooperation among our workforce stakeholders in the community. So the strategies that we invest in industry partnerships, these workforce intermediaries. The Milwaukee Area Healthcare Alliance, Wisconsin Community Services is one. Teague mentioned WRTP, Big Step, Milwaukee Builds, and the Green Skills Initiative. We've invested, since our inception, $15 million in these areas in order to put folks to work. We've used employer-driven strategies. We've listened to the words of the employers, what their needs are, and we've been able to look at the trades, renewable energies, utilities, health, manufacturing, and auto repair, which includes the conversion, compressed natural gas conversion of the fleet for the city of Milwaukee. We looked at the agriculture, urban forestry, to put together training networks that give credentials, which is most important to employers, that build pathways from high school to credentialing that can lead to long-term sustainable industry sector jobs. We want to plan and invest, fill the gaps that I mentioned, and build capacity in these programs. So those that are doing good work, that have the infrastructure to be able to deliver programming, to work with the employer community, to work with the job seeker, to put people to work, we want to be able to build capacity for those. But most importantly, we also want to streamline. We want to eliminate the duplication of services and add greater efficiencies to the workforce services that are being invested in the city. Now, what I'd like to do is to have Karen Gotzler from Urban Strategies, who has done a wonderful job of providing support for us and the Alliance, to kind of talk about how we align the public and private resources and how the dollars move.
And could you just spell your last name before you start? And Teague, if we could get the cards filled out for all of these folks later so that the clerk will have a record of. So please, if you could just spell your last name for us then.
My last name is Gotzler, G-O-T-Z-L-E-R. First name is Karen, and I'm with Urban Strategies. Urban Strategies is an organization that is contracted by the Funding Alliance to provide the staffing services, to convene, to provide research for labor market data, to assist with evaluation, to do the data tracking, collection, and analysis, and to do the reporting to the funders. And so we do it on the pooled funds as well as on some of the aligned funds of the Funding Alliance. And so essentially the way that the Funding Alliance operates is that the funders who are members can align and leverage their resources. About 50% of the money is private money, about 50% of the money is public money, and essentially what the funders have done is to formalize a structure to be able to coordinate their work so that it's about how they invest financially, but it's also how they advocate for changes in how they operate and how workforce development takes place. So in the first 5 years of the Funding Alliance, the funders have invested about $77 million totally. This is all of the funders combining all of the data that they report to us on a semi-annual basis. So they've aligned about $77 million, which is averages out to about $16 million a year that goes into job preparation, training, placement, and retention. And we've attracted a little over $3 million, and actually right now this material was developed a couple months ago, so we're just in the middle of a reporting cycle, so we'll be doing another statistical analysis at the end of March, but we've recently gotten several other commitments, so we're close to $3.5 million right now in federal and national funds, and that part of the attraction for a lot of the local funders is that by putting their money in, they're not only leveraging it locally, as Jerry said, but also that's an opportunity for us to attract those other dollars. So far, through October of 2013, the Funding Alliance dollars through the pooled funds have served about 5,000 job seekers. 35% of them have received some sort of a recognized credential, and 70% of them have become employed. So with full-time employment typically related to the job training that they've been involved in, and statistically speaking, that's a very high placement percentage nationally compared to about 35% nationally. So we have about double the success rate. And part of the reason that we have that is because of this concept of industry partnerships that I'm going to have Lamont Smith from our staff talk about. Lamont is the person on our staff who does primarily the data collection, the participant information, and also works with the industry partnerships to track their progress and report performance to our funders.
Hi, good mid-morning. Excuse me. My name is Lamont Smith. Again, I'm the Public Policy and Research Manager for the Milwaukee Area Workforce Funding Alliance. To summarize, we do a lot of work. I think I want to start with that. And over the past 5 years, the funders have done a tremendous job in creating this mechanism, again, to support the work of collaborating and coordinating systems. And that's really what this is all about. The national model that we follow is really about trying to align the different actors from government, CBO, service-providing agencies, aligned with the technical college and other means of post-secondary education and also the funding community. As you go through the PowerPoint, we'll get to this. There's just, we found that it's about 50-50 the money that's being split between the public and private sector on workforce development. And I think the other strength of what we've been able to find is that we know where the money's going and who it's going to, and that's part of the information we try to be able to use to best build the workforce development system out. So using the industry partnership model, again, is sector-based, which means, we really try to look at the labor market information, look where the areas of growth are in employment for a particular area, and we try to really enhance those systems that serve that particular industry. So in many cases, that means getting the employers to chime in on what the industry standards are for those credentials, and then really try to align where those entry-level credentials could be built upon to lead to this career path. So the career paths, we mentioned a little bit about this, have been in healthcare, construction, manufacturing, and automotive industry right now. But the important thing about this is that I think that there's a model for being able to create these partnerships in different industries. So I think, going forward, one of the exciting pieces is that, not just one set of players can influence industry, and not everybody has access to the same information if they're, working independently. But with the collaboration idea, we find that we can identify, areas of growth for employment, and then recreate those systems to be able to create the, the path of learning find themselves in a position they don't want to. So a good example is that that we've seen being taken up on the state level is in the automotive industry. Now there's an established, employer association that has a foundation associated with it, and they really do a good job of aligning the K-12 system with the entry-level automotive skills. But what we're finding is the technological shift has been such that even the experienced workers have had to pretty much learn a whole new set of skills when you look at the heavy-duty CNG maintenance requirements and also the hybrid, and we're talking about fleets here in a lot of cases. And, it creates a tremendous opportunity to bring new people into an industry and also skill up existing workers. But the important part about that is that, the industry has to be able to chime in on what those standards are. So by working with the employers and also having the connection with the technical college, they've been able to work together to create customized courses where people can learn the skills they need fairly quickly, and they're able to coordinate that in sort of an equal playing field. And then also, when necessary, create new career paths by working with the CBO training programs and helping them meet the standards of the industry as well. And I think that's those three pieces working together has been a lot of what we've really tried to establish the ability to do in any given industry.
So you can see that it aligns really well with the ready-to-work concept that the county's trying to expand, and this is a great way to do it because it also leverages a lot of the other investments that the Funding Alliance has made. So, for example, in the description Lamont is describing, we were able to use some of the federal money that we were able to attract because of the collaboration to be able to support METC to develop this alternative fuel curriculum. And so the curriculum was actually funded with those dollars, and the way the process works, the employers make a fairly significant investment because they're also providing some on-the-job training as well, and very often providing some training facilities that can be used for this process. So we've really seen this project be able to advance the work of a lot of the sectors within our economy to make a big difference in order to make that possible. And so in order to do that, a lot of our work has really been also in building the capacity of the system. So the curriculum development, for example, we also were able to access about $1 million of donations from Microsoft for the industry partnerships to do IT upgrades. We've done a lot of work in working with funders to standardize the measures that they use for performance to determine the success of the organizations that are being funded, so that all of the funders are essentially looking at the same data consistently, and it's not an organization having to report one thing to, for instance, Helen Bader Foundation, another thing to Northwestern Mutual Foundation, another thing to the county. So there's an opportunity to have a shared system of measurements and to actually use a results-based performance management framework. And then we've also done some organizational assessments to help these partnerships be able to have the infrastructure to be able to report and to deliver accurate data. So it's really been very much of a systems effort to be able to move forward on that. And I'm not going to go into a lot of that because I think really you're more interested in some of the other issues. But a big part of our work has been to facilitate the funders coming together and talking through the issues that they're having related to workforce development and to be able to develop this common tracking system that everybody's able to invest in, and it really does give you the efficiency of every funder not having to bring in their own evaluator, their own monitor. One of the things that we wanted to pull together for you was some of the amounts of funds that have been pooled by the funders over the last few years. The Funding Alliance started in 2008, but every year the amount of money in the pool has grown. So in 2008, the funders pooled $15,000. That was their start. But then it's grown exponentially. So this is the cumulative total through about September or October of last year. And it includes only cash. It does not include receivables. It doesn't include any pledges. It also doesn't include employer contributions or any in-kind contributions. So, for example, it doesn't include convening fees that the Helen Bader Foundation would be providing for providing meeting space or paying for conferences or supporting events. It doesn't include the administrative work, for instance, that the Housing Authority for the City of Milwaukee has provided in providing oversight to the solar training program or the green automotive. But it at least gives you an idea of the kinds of investments that have been made in the pooled funds. And then the other thing that Teague had asked for was a sort of a rough breakdown of what were the different kinds of funds that had come into the pool and how were they allocated. So about $1.8 million in federal dollars, about $400,000 in national foundation dollars, and then we distinguish within the pool between funds that are also donor-directed and those that are alliance-directed. So the donor-directed funds are those where the donor says, we want to fund this organization to do this work, or we want to fund in a particular sector. And that typically is a result of some of their mission issues for that particular organization. So, for example, with Milwaukee County, in the revised resolution, you've identified some principles specifically to take a look at sectors where there would be participants that would be referred by other departments. So that, for example, would be an example of a donor-directed. Although, frankly, when you take a look at the partnerships that we've invested in, for the most part, they've all been targeting low and moderate income and low skilled individuals, both men and women, who are either unemployed or underemployed for job training. And the final slide here just gives you a brief idea of the funds that have been aligned. So there's the funds that have been pooled, and there's categories within the pooled funds, and this is just an example of the other funds that have been aligned by the partners towards those same goals. And it also gives you an idea of who some of the other members in the Funding Alliance are, so that you'd be able to get a sense of who your other partners would be, in addition to having met Jerry and Gil. But as I said, we don't really have a mechanism to capture the employer investments. We know that's pretty significant on a regular basis, or some of the in-kind, but at least this gives you an idea of what some of that has been.
Thank you. Does that complete the presentation? All right. Really an excellent presentation. I want to thank everyone that came. I think I at least understand it so much better, and I've sat through all the budget and so on. So very good presentation. Thank you. I think we'll just go around the committee, starting with our... You're going to yield. Okay. Why don't we go around the committee? I'll go to Supervisor Schmidt next, Johnson, Khalif Rainey, and then our vice chair.
Okay. Yeah, you have questions?
Go ahead, Supervisor
Schmidt.
I'll please.
Yield to you.
Okay,
to
well,
Supervisor Schmidt.
Yeah, age before beauty, of course.
Yeah, you didn't have a choice.
So, just we talked about 800,000, that's the foreclosures, 400,000 were first development,
okay.
And 250 was the record, so that was the 1.3. Million dollars if we have economic development. I have a quick comment, Madam Chair, please.
Please.
And before a question or a quick question or two, maybe at most, is that, you know, 25% from land sales or put in economic development. I am going to be a big pusher that we at least do that. I guess some of the little selfish reasons in that I spent a lot of hours in this land sales business in the county grounds, and selfishly, all this money is coming from UWM, and you know, this area that I think all this significant money that's come in, I want to make sure it's used for a lot of it, maybe more than 25% for really economic development. I want to be a little selfish on that, parochial, whatever. I want to see it go to, I think, number one priority, everybody talks a good game, it is jobs. I don't think there's any question about that. Now I want to make sure, now we got another $5 million coming in February 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Then for 4 years thereafter in the February's, 87.5, okay. And I know selfishly in the budget, I mean, we've got, you know, where the money's going to go. And I know we've talked about this cooperation, you know, with the two executive and legislative branch, but I want to make sure we get a kick at the can. And, you know, it's very clear. I don't want to be overlapping with Potawatomi money, okay? Potawatomi does this and this. I'm not, and take this in the right way, everyone. I'm not interested in buttressing some other different departments or whatever. I want to see economic development, okay? And the monies that we worked so hard for, and I did, okay, that it's used properly here. And that we just don't find these fanciful projects. And there's, you know, we could put, but there's always more need than there's money. We all know that, okay? But then, you know, I think we have to be very particular. And I don't have much of a problem with what we did. I want the economic development expert to prioritize, especially in the jobs area, and say, how can we leverage our money? I like this whole concept. I think we all do. I thought, the, you know, it was a pretty good presentation before, but this is very good, okay? Accountability. Data management, goals, I mean, this is all the stuff we're looking for. This all of us have complained about, that's the right word, in the past, because damn it, excuse me, if we're going to use this kind of money, we want to make sure it reaches and it does something. There's too many years, and I won't go in, you know, a long expose here, where, you know, the money just wasn't used properly enough. I mean, all this money. So, you know, I think the only question was, and it came up at the board, you know, is $400,000 too much? I know, see, I mean, Milwaukee's got more money in CDBG. I mean, so they can, you know, we're very limited, as we all appreciate. So I don't think anybody said we shouldn't be funding this. I'm okay with $400,000, as a matter of fact, okay? Maybe some of my colleagues are not, and I respect that, okay? Where else would we go with it, then, is my question.
And in the future, when we're spending this money, especially big money next year and in the budget looking for, you know, maybe it's a panel, maybe meet with Madam Chair or maybe anybody else who's interested and say, here's what we're looking to spend the money. What do you think and what are your reasons? We want to be partners in this. And I want to make sure that just what I stated, okay, it's economic development. I want that prioritized. And I want good projects that help everybody, not just a section of the community, but helps the whole Milwaukee County community. So that's my comments. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to, first of all, I'd like to move to adopt the resolution. I feel that way because our ready-to-work program is sunsetting, and as Supervisor Schmick alluded to, we're interested in jobs. We're interested in low-income, low-income, low-skilled people getting jobs. That is our concern. We can talk about monies being spent for this or that. We can say that we're supporters of this program and that program. It doesn't mean a darn thing unless we see people getting jobs so that they can improve their quality of life. And so that's the reason I am going to move to adopt this resolution. The Milwaukee Area Workforce Development Alliance has taken workforce development and it's taken economic development, and that's been a movement as far as sector-based initiatives are concerned within the last 10 years or so. So this pooling of money, the using the private funders, the public funders, the employers, WRTP Big Step not only came to us with respect to construction activities, but also other jobs looking toward what could be done. Now, we spent $1 million or so really tracking what they did. We used Baker Tilly in order to find out what was being done to report to us on an ongoing basis what they were doing, and we expect some similar type of information from you so that we know that people are getting the jobs. I went to Martin Luther King, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration on the 20th at the African American Women's Center on Valleys Street, and five gentlemen were brought up, and they were shown to whoever was there that these people were employed because of the efforts of the supervisors passing the amendments to the budget in 2012 in order to fund the Ready to Work initiative. That's concrete. That's what we want to see. Those persons have been described as being into crime, and their lives have been turned around, and they felt very good about themselves. These are young people in their 20s, young 20s, who felt very good about what was going on because of our initiative, because of the initiative of then Supervisor Biddle and Supervisor Lipscomb. And again, that is sunsetted now. It's no longer available to us. I see this as an alternative with all the partners, with all the employers, with the national organization providing guidance. I see this as a way to expand what we just completed with respect to that initiative. So I am fully for this. I think that it's going to work. I think it's going to work. It's been worked since 2008, and I only hope that we get the feedback that we need to see where the funding that we provide provides jobs for those people who need those jobs right now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So just for the record, we had previously passed this measure 5-2. However, it got sent back unanimously by the board, and your motion is to approve it and send it back to the board with a recommendation for approval.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's at the $400,000
level. Yes.
Because I think that was part of the question on the amount. Supervisor Taylor, do you have any questions? No. Supervisor Rainey?
I was interested in knowing if a municipality has allocated to the fund, such as the request in the Milwaukee County. Can you give me an example of a municipality has donated so generously, such as $400,000.
Are you talking about the city, for instance, City of Milwaukee? Yeah, if you take a look at the, it would be slide 16, you'll see that City of Milwaukee has put in about $1.6 million so far.
Yeah, but that's Department of Labor and stuff, too.
Some of it's Department of Labor. Some of it's the block grant planning dollars. Some of it's from their from city funds. It's not actually none of it is block grant money. It's because they're the city grants administration office, so they administer other funds other than block grant as well. Well, that's not true. I think about 15,000 of it might be block grant money.
So the total.
So how much from city funds?
If I still have the floor.
Yeah.
Okay, so the total amount that was contributed by the City of Milwaukee was how much?
I would have to break that down for you because some of those funds are that are shown on that line item. Some of them are a very small amount is block grant. I think about maybe at the most 15,000, but it's other other Department of Labor funds, other grant funds, and other city economic development and administrative funds.
I'm interested in knowing the exact allocations by local municipalities, not federal dollars or state dollars. Just what was the contribution by a local municipality? Because $400,000, I believe, that would that take precedent as the most that's been allocated by a local municipality?
It
depends how you measure it. Right. So if you looked at it as separate tax levy or separate land sales, we would be a leader. We would be a leader investing in workforce development. In fact, we are a leader in workforce development. This board invested $500,000 a year over a two-year period into workforce development into a strategy called sector-based intermediaries. And we used what resources we had available to us, which were either tax levy or land sales, because that's what we have access to. The lion's share of money that is spent on workforce development is federal or state dollars. And so it's left to the municipalities to then supplement where they can with what resources that they have. And so in one way we're a leader because we're investing more of our own money that we could be spending on other things and showing that jobs is a priority. On the other hand, there are other mechanisms where people have access to more money than us. And so, for example, it's through the MAWIB, the Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Board, that gets federal dollars to be able to spend, through the City of Milwaukee or otherwise. And with that comes the restrictions that are required for those funds. And that's what's really unique about our funds is that they are not as restricted, and we can be more progressive and more aggressive on current workforce strategies. And so the slides that you have here, you have a couple of areas that are related to the public. You have the city resources, largely federal dollars, but other dollars that are allocated of 1.593. You also have the Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Board, which is a very small dollar amount, but these are pooled funds. That means that they put $1.6 million into pooled funds. It's this other slide, if you want to look on what they're actually spending. It's the last slide that you have here. This is how much they're actually spending. So you see the Milwaukee Area Workforce Development is actually spending $20 million. You have the Technical College spending money. Yeah, the City of Milwaukee spending money through different things, through their municipal court, through their block grant office. They spent a total of $5 million, although only 1.6 of it was it pooled. So it gets very complicated. Because we don't receive the federal dollars, our overall dollar amount is not as strong as other players. But because we have more flexibility, you guys have been a leader in investing in workforce out of your own funds, and this would be an extension of that.
Okay. Can you share with me some success stories? I see you guys are active around the country. Here in Milwaukee, we are in somewhat of a dire situation. Can you share with me some examples of success that you had around the country with this program?
Are you asking about other cities?
Yes.
Well, they have roughly the same rate of placement as we do here in Milwaukee, because really what's successful is this model of funders coming together virtually all of the funding collaboratives that you see around the country similar to ours. There is an alignment of public and private dollars. We have the funding collaborative with the most, the greatest number of members, so we have in some ways the most successful of collaboratives, and our funding collaborative is it's definitely a leader in terms of working on shared goals and shared priorities together. The other cities have similar, they might be targeting different sectors, for example, but I'll give you one of our very successful ones, which I think the county is probably interested in, is the automotive one, because of the work that we've done funding MATC to develop the hybrid vehicle maintenance program and also the compressed natural gas. And this would be an opportunity, for example, for the county to have some of their workers go through this program. And we actually did this with the City of Milwaukee's Department of Public Works, where through this grant, their employees were able to take these courses without paying for them, basically. And so this would be, for instance, something the county could also do is because of your investment in the collaborative. So, and through that, we've had a very high success rate of job placement. In fact, we have a couple women that are now working at dealerships who have gone through the automotive repair program, African-American women. So that's pretty exciting. You might have seen one of them in the paper recently.
And if I could add to that, just on a national level, I think this kind of ties to some of the opportunities that come through working through a national network. There's not just local philanthropy as relates here, but there's also national philanthropy that supports this project. So groups like the Hitachi Foundation, employers chip in. So for an example, in other cities, there's different industries. So in Kansas, you know, they're big on aerospace, and also in the other projects in Mobile, Alabama, directly from Boeing Foundation to support a manufacturing training in those particular industries. They got, you know, tremendous amount of support locally from their local governments. I don't have the exact amounts at which they chipped in, but, you know, it's just another example of how in other places they focused on particular industries that are there. There's other automotive projects. There's one in the Bay Area. Boston. We keep bringing this up because it seems from what we've heard from the employers on the labor market information, that's one of those areas that's growing here. Everybody's heard about Speedway putting in CNG fueling stations, you know, hyper stations coming in. There's a lot of fleets. So other places are doing that, focusing on that industry too, and obviously, you know, construction.
Sir, you're going to have to come up to the microphones. That we are being recorded, so.
Oh.
And I know there are some people watching this right now.
Okay. The actual location of each of the alliances and each of the collaborations is really driven by that location itself. And I was mentioning the city of Seattle, which is very much into technology. The Gates Foundation is heavily involved in this. City of Cincinnati is involved in manufacturing, as we are. So it really is driven by what is important to those locations across the country.
Supervisor Rainey, you have the floor.
Okay, so for the industries that you propose here in Milwaukee, can you give me a projection of pay scale, a ceiling and a floor? I just want to make sure we're not subsidizing, you know, poverty wage employment here in Milwaukee County.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit about what we've seen. I mean, all the career paths we support are backed by credentials, and in a lot of cases, if there's an apprenticeship present, we try to. We're looking at about $12.50 an hour plus. That's pretty much the goal. That's sort of the self-sufficiency wage. It's what we try to determine is basically 250% of poverty is sort of a base level of economic security. And so part of working with the employers and trying to find out and make sure that, you know, there are jobs that align with the training, you know, that's sort of what we've seen.
So $12.50 would be the floor. What would be the ceiling?
So we've seen a lot of the registered apprenticeship track. We're getting up into the $25 to $30 an hour in some cases, particularly in the automotive. The technicians, from what we heard, you know, come in at around $35, $40, and they can be up to $60,000, $70,000 a year. That sort of speaks to what we've been talking about. Is one of the one of the examples of in an industry review, and this is really what we try to get to, is breaking down, you know, just what are those different levels of advancement in a career and having an expectation of what that career path looks like, and then, you know, making sure that, you know, we're meeting the demand of employers for those positions.
You have to come up to the microphone again.
I am. And what Lamont was speaking to, the opportunity to, there is ultimately no ceiling. When we start looking at labor market trends, when we start looking at how we process the work that we do and how we align what we're doing, we continue to look at the industry partnerships that we currently engage in. We look to see what's trending. Healthcare, as an example, we both look at the low-skill, low-wage workers. We look at upskilling incumbent workers in order to move them further. So when we look at things like looking at what the employer looks for, we want to move from associate in nursing degree credentials to bachelor's degree, fast-tracking that process to make room, and really looking at pathways so that if I do start as a CNA or a healthcare aide, that I can move into nursing, move into, and really looking at those opportunities to prevent there from being a ceiling. We really want to make sure that we have the most viable workforce in the market. So that's part of the goal that we do. When we look at those partnerships, we will be forever tweaking. So we look at healthcare just from the service standpoint, but we also have to look at things like health informatics, as an example, which is on horizon. We have to look at the delivery services in hospitals, as an example, with how they deliver their pharmaceuticals and what that means for folks that are coming right out of high school who can get credentialed, which then can be on a pathway. You know, I can start at 15 with minimal training and credentialing, but then work my way through to something much greater. So that really is part of what we look for in the work that we do.
Okay.
Vice Rennie?
Sure. One last question. If you could just share with me your reporting mechanisms that you use for the members who are already contributing to the fund.
There's a couple, and I guess you know, another thing I was thinking about too, as far as the amount of money, it is, you know, getting a chance to come into the. Aspect of looking at how much the municipalities kick in, but foundations and others have put quite a bit of cash resources to this. And so there's a couple of things we do track. We track the investments that as they go to community-based organizations and other service providers that are what we call aligned. So we ask the funders to describe for us in a report. Who did you fund and for what activities did you fund? So it could be case management, on-the-job training, employment training, adult basic education support services, capacity building. So we track that through a fairly developed database that's just Excel. It's an Excel-based database, but it's a database. And we track the performance of these programs that are part of the pooled funds, funds that are pooled and aligned with the national monies. We have a tracking system that is another Excel-based database that interfaces basically with the other programs that report to us, like WRTP, ETO. They report out to us in those mechanisms that we help develop the capacity for organizations to report basically at what their technological level is. But that's been a part of the work, too, I would say, is developing ways to align the reporting systems of different training programs that have training outputs and further things that they follow up on, like employment. So we track all that materially. And then we also, in certain cases, we're participating in a national evaluation through the national partner. And they have their own evaluation software. But, yeah, I'm not sure if that completely.
That's helpful.
So, you know, the participants sign a consent form, so we literally are able to collect all of their personal information to be able to track them later on down the line. And so we're actually right now in the midst of a comparative study where we're working with DWD to document within the healthcare arena and also construction the extent to which participants who have gone through this industry partnership model are more successful than people who go through some other sort of training program. So there's many levels of evaluation that we're subjected to. And then for any of the Department of Labor funds, then there's also a separate federal monitoring process that we go through. So in the case of the funds that you all would invest in the funding alliance, you could direct some of those dollars, and that's why we talked about the distinction of donor-directed versus alliance-directed. It's always good to have a pool of funds that are not committed immediately so that you can be more flexible toward market trends. But if there are certain things, for instance, that you as Milwaukee County know you want to invest in, let's say the board decides it wants to invest in construction, it wants to invest in high-growth potential job creation, particularly for Milwaukee County residents who might be low-income and low-skilled, then you can designate that. The whole funding alliance really is dedicated to that anyway. But if you have some additional sectors that you're particularly interested in, you can target that.
Okay.
Supervisor Rennie.
And Director Whaley Smith, the board will have the ability to direct those dollars, or would that be under economic development? Who will have the ability to channel those dollars if we saw fit to, you know, invest in a certain area?
Sure. Yes to all of that. So I want to let you know how we're looking at this from the administrative perspective. So the first thing is that today's presentation was really about Milwaukee and what the Milwaukee Alliance is doing. So you heard from Lamont about investment in green technology and conversion to compressed natural gas and their placement in that sector, their support in the work that we're doing in the construction sector. So as far as the national models, there's the National Fund for Workforce Solution. That was one of the earlier slides that Karen presented, which shows how this is all working nationwide. So I'll send that link out to all the supervisors, because clearly you guys are very engaged in this, and it's a wonderful resource to be able to look in those things. As far as the sectors themselves, in partnership with these guys, we are able to look at labor data very specifically. And we do what's called a regression analysis, which is a fancy way of saying, let's apply our criteria to what we want to try to solve. And so if you look at the growth potential of jobs in the Milwaukee market, or in the Wisconsin market, which is sometimes as narrow as we can get it, there are a tremendous amount of jobs that are out there that either require a master's degree or are very low paying. And so what we have done is we have looked at the sectors that have high growth potential, meaning there's a number of jobs there, that are paying at least $18 an hour. So you talked about $12.50 an hour, but looking at sectors that pay $18 an hour as their median wage, and sectors that do not require a bachelor's degree, because there are other resources from other groups that are dedicated towards getting people through the educational system. It's a very targeted approach based on sector-based intermediaries. The difficulty with us doing that regression analysis, us doing the RFP, us doing the accountability monitoring, is that we don't have the infrastructure to do it. We're a new player at the table when it comes to workforce development. And so unlike the city of Milwaukee that has an entire block grant office with monitors and lots of people, we don't have that. So we need a partner to be able to go through that exercise. And we need a partner that also understands the other funding networks, because if we say, for example, that we think that the appropriate growth sector would be paint manufacturing or something like that, if there's no sector-based intermediary that's already working on that and the other funders aren't interested in working on that, we can't go it alone. We'll just be throwing money at a problem that we can't solve by ourselves. And so we want the partners to be making the decisions about the growth sectors, where there's the appropriate organizations to work with, and where other funders are part of that. Now, so the way that the resolution is drafted now is we do have some criteria, high growth sectors that support county customers. So essentially it's just not county residents, but it's related to the people that we serve, people through the child support system, people through the criminal justice system, people through veterans, other people that, we have a directive to account for, the same way that Harley-Davidson supports manufacturing, because that's what they do.
Okay, so, let's kind of focus. The answer to the question is yes.
Yeah. Well, so what we want to have happen is the board set the criteria, and we think the high criteria should be high growth sector where there are partners willing to work and there are leveraging funds. If we want to say more narrowly, well, part of that has to be the construction sector. We can do that, but we already know that that's a high-growth sector that other people are working on. And so part of it is just getting the level of trust of you guys as the policy group, setting where is the policy of where this money should go. We think it should be high growth sectors. That's where we plan to invest.
Yeah, and I think that's the question that this committee is trying to grapple with. How much, mm-hmm. and are you willing to agree with the directive that the administration is recommending? That doesn't mean you as a policymaker couldn't suggest something else. So sure. that's really the issue before us.
Indeed. Thank you,
Any
Madam
more
Chair.
Questions?
No, thank you. Right. I appreciate it.
Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have concerns because we're bait and switching, because Big Step, WRTY, was doing exactly what we wanted, and now we are not funding this. I'm not knocking this alliance at all. I think what you're trying to do is something great. I'm trying to bring people around and bring them together. But the bottom line, let's look at your reporting system. Are they going to report us every quarter? Because when we deal with Big Step, we put so many strains on them. It was ridiculous. Now we just send whenever you want to report. I don't know your table of reporting. I like looking at saying that we are dealing with Milwaukee County residents. We made that very clear because we leveraged our dollars with Big Step when we did this. This is just leveraging. This is relationships. It's not about what the – now this is what the county exec is saying. Hey, we're going because I like these people. I know them. I work with them. They are fiancés with me. So it's not about that. It's doing the same thing, but we just bait and switch. We're putting less money into it. Is this a one-time funding, or is this an ongoing funding? I didn't hear that. Because no, he might come back again.
$400,000 is one time.
Well, not necessarily.
For this budget.
Yeah. But again, this we have budgets year. Each year that we continue to fund. Is this one-time funding? Is this on a continuing basis? None of those questions have been out. Because one thing that I really do want to know is Milwaukee County residents. And that's very been clear. And when is the reporting mechanism? Is this going to be a quarterly, every 6 months? I would like to know the findings of that. I don't care about the sector. Because we had, when we gave Big Step the opportunity to set the step sectors, they had them all over the array. We just said we just want to make a family support and living wage. But we don't have all that right now. Only thing I have is that you do a good job. You leverage your money quite well. If we had our grant writer, like we've been saying, we could leverage our money and get federal dollars and give you more money. Because the way you're doing it, I understand how you're doing it. So
is there a question?
No. I just had a comment.
All right. Supervisor Bowen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And building on the comments, Supervisor Mayo, I'm kind of in the same place where I'm trying to understand how we're making this shift from the great progress that we made before. Obviously, this is a great organization, and they've been doing great work, but they're pitting against the great work of another program, and that was the Ready to Work program. So I want to be clear, how much does it cost to be a member of the Alliance a year?
Is there a required minimum?
There is no required minimum to be part of the Alliance. Again, this started very loosely. When it started over 5 years ago, it started very loosely and informally with funders coming around the table. You know, I'm investing $100,000. You're investing $50,000. I'm investing $1.5 million. How do we best work together to have the greatest impact? Mm-hmm. So there really is no minimum to there's no fee to join. Everybody there is a volunteer. Everybody chooses to be part of the Alliance.
All right.
If I could just follow up, the entire $400,000 that's proposed would go directly to sector-based intermediaries like WRTP Big Step that are doing this work. We in our budget separately are carrying, we carry several memberships as economic development. So one of those is a $10,000 contribution to the Workforce Funding Alliance, the same way that we contribute to Visit Milwaukee, the Railroad Consortium, Milwaukee 7 sewer pack. So we've got that part of it covered in our budget. This is directly to those intermediaries. And I don't think it's in anybody's interest to take money from one group and the other. We're trying to expand the pie. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the graph here, the Workforce Funding Alliance has invested $3.3 million in WRTP Big Step. And so they have shown a commitment to that entity. They've shown a commitment to the construction sector. We'll continue to show a commitment to that construction sector. And the key here is that federal and national matching dollars. is that right now, by investing directly into WRTP Big Step, we are losing the ability to match our funds to go out and get those funds, and that's what we're trying to accomplish. And so whatever reporting mechanism we need in place, you know, we're happy to do quarterly reports. We're happy to, you know, continue to do that, because I understand that this is a shift, but we fundamentally, this will be a shift that gets more money to these organizations, more money in the pot, less money spent on reporting with the same accountability. And I understand that there may be skepticism around that, but that's the goal we're trying to accomplish. As far as the continued funding of this, Ready to Work and this extension of Ready to Work are really being funded through land sales, through action by the county board. So we have not identified a separate funding stream other than land sales, which are handled on a year-to-year basis. My goal is to knock everybody's socks off with the number of people we get jobs placed, so that I can go back to you and go back to the county executive and show that this is working, and we need to continue to fund this type of workforce development.
Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just don't see it that way, and I'm trying to understand. If the other partners are putting in, I think it's roughly $350,000, right? The city, the partners that are part of the alliance of their own funds, we're still surpassing them as an entity, as an intergovernmental entity. Nobody contributes that much as a local municipality. So I guess that's why I'm trying to make the connection there.
And Supervisor, the difference is if you look at the money that these entities are spending, so for example, you have the Milwaukee Area Workforce Investment Fund, they're spending $20 million. The city of Milwaukee is spending $5 million. And so that's what they're putting in workforce development. The difference is that they have staff to do the RFPs, to do the reporting, to do the labor sector data and all these other things, and we don't have that infrastructure. We're not set up as a department to do the grant making and the monitoring, and we're being very, very inefficient about it. And here we have a partner that will help create that efficiency, and oh, by the way, we'll also go out and get federal funds to match our funds that is new money related to these programs. And so the question really is, why wouldn't we do it? Why would we continue to invest separately with different accountability measures that are less efficient and not go after federal matching funds when we have a mechanism to do it?
And I don't want to be argumentative, but we're talking about 2008 to 2013 numbers that you're referring to, not per year. And then we're also, you brought up the $10,000 amount that we would contribute to the fund or to the alliance to be a part of it, right? I think that's the number that we're talking about to collaborate with them, and to after that, then we figure out, well, what is the angle that the Milwaukee County wants to create their job training entity and fund that entity. When you're talking about $5 million out of the city of Milwaukee, I think you would say that includes pass-through funds from, I think that's what Supervisor Rainey was getting at, from federal and state budgets as well.
I think yes, that's part of it, because they're the direct. They have the authority to direct those funds. We have the directive to dedicate our funds, and we want to get this money out on the street in the most efficient way possible. And right now, we're doing that. It was mentioned silos, and there are things that we can do to break those silos. But the best way to break those silos is to partner with the other funders, and this is the model nationwide that people are trying to figure out. Let's not be in a silo and make these decisions by ourselves. Let's make them together. And so that's what we want to do, and it has the added benefit that we don't have the compliance mechanism internally, because we're not a grant-making department in this particular factor, and we don't have the capacity, as Supervisor Mayo indicated, to hire a grant writer to go out and get additional funds. Here we're able to do that.
All right, let's move along. I think presentation has been very good. I think we've all seen this. Supervisor Bowen, do you have a concluding remark? And then we do have a motion on the table.
Right. I will just close and say I do support the opportunity to be a part of the alliance. I think there still needs to be more answers to some of the questions that are still out there. So I'm not against passing it today, but what needs to pass on the board should not be what exactly is on paper right now. There needs to be more clarity on how much do we contribute and what are we investing in that to receive. And a lot of the details just need to be worked out. So I would expect a substitute amendment or a resolution to be worked out by board day, and I'll collaborate with the director. And I know Supervisor Lipscomb has been working with you as well, so that we can iron those details out, as well as the points that Supervisor Mayo talked about, reporting and a number of those different issues.
Well, okay, and I appreciate Supervisor Bowen stating that's going to happen. I would hope that Supervisor Lipscomb honors the fact that this committee does the hard work. We have the people before us right now for questions. I do wish he would have brought any substitute amendments to committee level so that questions could be asked. But I think, fair warning out there, it sounds like even if we take an action at the committee, there may be some additional changes by board days.
And I just want to say to that, it's entirely on me, not Supervisor Lipscomb. Supervisor Lipscomb, as one of the sponsors of Ready to Work, he and I have had continuing conversations, and we've talked about some elements, and I was not able to get that fully drafted by this committee meeting because of other commitments. I've talked to several of you about workforce development. We are open to, figuring out how to get this done in the best way possible. I just don't want it to be held against him. It's really my delay in communicating back to him what we might be able to work out on our side of the negotiation table, rather than any effort by him.
All right, fair enough. And if Supervisor Lipscomb's watching, I apologize then if you want to take the blame for that. I would like things to be brought at committee. So I think we've all had a good chance to discuss this. Supervisor Johnson has advanced a motion in support, and there may be some substitute resolution at board meeting, but in order to move this forward, I think a vote on Supervisor Johnson's motion is appropriate at this time. So, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
On the motion to adopt, Supervisors Bowen.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Taylor.
Aye.
Rainey.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye.
There are 7 ayes. The motion to adopt prevails.
Thank you, everyone. And again, I apologize for that long wait this morning. Yep. Committee, it's 1:15. How about if we take a 15-minute break and then come back at 1 o'clock? I think the rest of the committee will go pretty quickly. Thank you.
Promise?
Well,